June 18th, 2018. Is that a cool way to
start from now on? That was really gripping, actually.
It really anchors the conversation.
Now we're just
in time.
Never going to say the name of the podcast.
LA Podcast. Scott Frazier.
A new day has dawned.
Host. Hayes Davenport. Host. we got so much stuff that we want to talk about this week. We have so many topics. We are doing a time crisis format. That's the name of this format. We have a kitchen timer. Very nice kitchen timer. That is a birthday gift for me. It's like, I want to say brass. I don't think it's brass. Real bronze. It's pretty loud, but we're going to allocate for each of our topics this week. We're going to allocate 4 minutes.
Okay. And is this just a challenge for us to see if we can do it?
Yeah. That's what it's mostly about, is improvement as hosts.
Okay. I like that.
So we'll just get right into it. I'm going to start the timer.
I'm on edge already. And you gave me caffeine.
It was so you would go faster. A little faster. Okay. Here we go. It's not very exact, so it might not be exactly 4 minutes. Okay, California passed a new budget on Friday. Jerry Brown signed it. It's in the books. There's a law that says that they would lose, the state legislature would not get paid for the year if they didn't pass the budget. So now they pass the budget right on time every year.
Every year, yeah. They used to always go over. Budgets were not signed routinely by June 15th, then the voters put something in the Constitution that said, if you don't do this, you lose your pay. So now they're actually pretty good about it.
So how does this budget affect LA? What are the biggest, most relevant things for the city?
The key for the city of LA is that as we've been trying to deal with our homelessness crisis, city officials have locked down, city and county officials have locked down funding here, billions of dollars to construct new housing units for the homeless and also to provide services to them. But they're also looking for a commitment from state legislators to match the funding that we're generating locally here to help tackle the issue. So when Jerry Brown came out with his May revision of the budget, he had not met what state legislators in the Assembly and Senate wanted for homeless funding.
So when he revised the budget, he took some money out of what they had allocated for homeless funding?
Good point. No, actually what happened was we had a larger revenue.
Okay.
More money came in than we were actually expecting. California's budget is so large and so volatile that the governor comes out with a budget in January and then does a follow-up in May to actually check in on how we've done.
Yeah. Sorry, my cat just walked in. He's like a budget wonk. He really just eats this stuff up.
He heard me say June and he was busting in to say, no, it's the May revise. you're right, Bart. So he came back and said we had $9 billion more.
Yeah, our state budget is really like income tax dependent, right? It's just like how well few billionaires are doing really depends on how much money the state makes.
Highly contingent on capital gains. And so basically the people that make the very most in this state, mostly through the stock market, made a lot of money this year.
Yeah.
And we ended up with almost $10 billion more than was expected. So there was a lot of arguing back and forth between legislators who want to spend more on social services and Jerry Brown, who wants to put more of that money into our savings account, our rainy day funds.
Which is his thing. He's Mr. Piggy Bank.
He is Mr. Piggy Bank.
He really...
God, I wish that we had hit that nickname earlier in his career. But so the governor of California, Jerry Brown, has the power to do a line item veto for anything in the budget. He can reduce unilaterally whatever legislators put in there. So he has the ability to put a lot of pressure downward on state spending. So there was a lot of, they're all Democrats. There's a lot of talk back and forth about how everybody's constituents could be made happy, how everybody could come away with a win. And they essentially did that by the 15th. They put $500 million additional into a homelessness emergency fund, which was more than the $300 million that Jerry Brown had originally proposed, but less than the $1.5 billion that assembly legislators wanted.
Wow.
Garcetti, for his point, for his part, was one of the mayors that was really hyping up the $1.5 billion assembly package.
Yeah.
But he came out and said that was kind of like our wildest expectation, and this $500 million, which is going to be allocated based on emergency need. So a lot of it is going to come to LA.
Most of it's going to go here. Yeah.
He said that that will make a huge dent, he believes, in the ability to get emergency shelters and
that's it's for building housing mostly, or for like services too, or just whatever we want.
I think it's across the board, but because it's viewed as emergency grant funding, it's like use it or lose it. It's not the same as our H and HHH funds, which we've seen sort of piling up as it becomes difficult to use them. So the expectation from the state will be the money will actually be tied to deadlines. You have to use it or the state takes it back.
Oh, the timer went off and it didn't make a noise.
Uh-oh.
You saw it. I know you saw it. You just wanted to... Oh, there it goes.
So accusatory. I did kind of glance over and
okay,
time crisis.
Four more minutes. Time crisis. I want to talk about a race that we didn't mention last week, a congressional primary race. Maxine Waters, everyone knows who she is. She reclaimed her time. She's very famous. She's running for re-election, obviously, for her seat in South LA County. She won the primary by a lot, but it's a top two race, and I want to talk about the guy who finished second, who's going to be running against her in the general. His name is Omar Navarro. He ran in 2016 also against Maxine Waters and lost. He's 28. He looks like Donkey Lips from Salute Your Shorts. He's a huge loser. And he is a Nazi.
Yeah.
Not like a hardline Republican. He is a Nazi, as in he subscribes to the ideology of the Nazi Party.
I feel like the line of difference there is kind of evaporating as time goes on.
I know, but there are still ways to, I think, distinguish yourself as a Nazi.
That's true.
And I feel very comfortable saying this because pretty much everyone who works for him and who he's friends with is an actual avowed Sieg Heiling Nazi.
Yeah.
He's very good friends with Baked Alaska.
Oh, great.
Former comedy rap video maker and now known internet Nazi. His bodyguard is Baked Alaska's bodyguard, mm-hmm. also a Nazi. And many of his closest campaign workers are Nazis. I'll tell you my personal experience with a couple of them. Right after the 2016 election, I went to a county supervisor meeting
mm-hmm.
where they were voting on a legal aid fund for undocumented people,
like right?
For immigration court. And a lot of people showed up to speak in favor of this thing. It was how we were going to fight back against Trump after he was elected. But a bunch of like pro-Trump people showed up to protest it. There were a couple young people who got up to speak who said that they were from like LA County Republicans or something.
Okay.
And they talked about how this money should be for real citizens and this is a crime, blah, blah, blah. The like classic Trump stuff.
Yeah.
But then this other woman gets up. This is a woman I've seen at a bunch of supervisor meetings. She gets up to speak. She says something incredibly offensive. She gets banned from the supervisor's meeting. Next week, we do it all over again. She comes back, yep. speaks. Apparently, there's no
you can't like
enforcement.
Ban somebody. You just have to kind of remove them on a case by case
basis. I guess so. And she has really exploited this loophole. Anyway, she gets up. She says very true to form. You know who's really behind all this? Like who's really pulling the strings on this legal aid fund stuff is the Jews,
of course.
And these two people from the supposedly from the LA County Republicans are sitting in the seats. They stand up and they applaud. And so I was like, what? You know, this is me still being very naive about, you know, these. But these are the LA County Republicans. So I almost wrote a strongly worded email to the LA County Republicans saying, like, these people are representing you. And then I thought, nobody's going to care. So anyway, I remember their names vaguely, and then I saw them pop up a few months later
mm-hmm.
as Omar Navarro campaign workers, not really the campaign workers. They are like his closest, like right hand yeah. people. These two, there's a man and a woman. There's a video that the campaign put up where the male Nazi is driving Omar Navarro from, there was like a pro-sanctuary protest in Cudahy when they were deciding whether to be a sanctuary city. Omar Navarro and these Nazis went to film themselves having logical debate with the protesters or whatever. And on the way out, protesters are following them and yelling at them. The male Nazi from the car window pepper sprays what appears to be a 12-year-old boy and empties a container of pepper spray at a 12-year-old. And then he calls the protesters monkeys. Omar Navarro is sitting right next to him there in the car. These people, I'm sorry, I'm going over my time.
That's fine.
They use, they're all on Twitter. They use the triple parentheses about Jews. The woman had a tweet where she said, if I was rich, I'd tip everyone 1488.
Okay.
14. Yeah. Being, you can look that up if you don't know what that means, but it's a Nazi thing.
And this is like,
they retweet Baked Alaska all the time.
His Dan and Amy from like Veep, basically.
100%. Okay. Yes.
Wow.
And both of them have since been kicked off Twitter for being Nazis. Anyway, other people have documented this. OC Weekly did a thing, about, this media group, the Red Elephants, that, is an anti-Semitic Nazi group that loves Omar Navarro. This is just to point out, I feel like other political Nazis have been getting attention. Even in California, there was Patrick Little, who was running for governor,
right,
and got like 0.5% of the vote. People in L.A. City gave Omar Navarro 20%+.
This is a district that spans from like West L.A. down to Inglewood.
Torrance, Hawthorne,
Inglewood.
Yeah.
That is disturbing and shy, even though Maxine Waters is going to win by like 50% of the vote, that this is the second vote getter.
Yeah, he beat a lot of LA Republicans, and he had a fundraiser. You know, Roger Stone is like his advisor.
Okay.
And so Mike Flynn showed up to his fundraiser at the Trump Golf Club. And so while he specifically has never been caught saying anything specifically Nazi beyond, you know, just like the normal Republican stuff.
Yeah.
At some point when
everyone
around
the
you
company
is a Nazi,
you keep, yeah.
Yeah. You might be a Nazi.
They didn't used to travel in such mixed company, the Nazis. There used to be like a general, oh, I don't want to surround myself with Nazis.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's friends with them for other reasons, personality reasons, or maybe they like having one non-Nazi in their friend group. anyway, time crisis.
You trampled your time limit.
I know. I abdicate. I have a couple short ones later. You can have a couple.
You went to Made in L.A.
Oh, yeah, I went to Made in L.A., sure. This is a show they do at the Hammer, mm-hmm. not every year, every like 2 or 3 years, I feel like, or at least that was the last one I went to. And it's artists from L.A. County, who I guess are working in L.A. I mean, it says where they're all from. I was pretty surprised how few of them are actually from L.A.
It's L.A.-based artists, though. That are
yes, L.A.-based artists, yeah. Yes. The show was great. Mm-hmm. I went a few years ago, and I remember there was one thing by an artist named Jennifer Moon that I really liked. But other than that, it was kind of underwhelming. But this year, it is awesome. The museum's free.
Right.
That's a beautiful space.
This is different than the like Pacific Standard.
This is different from Pacific Standard, yes. Okay. It's just like 30 artists who each have like one thing up. But it's a lot of the big installation-y things that I like. These like giant pieces that are really cool. There's one by a guy named Charles Long who works on Mount Baldy that is really like, it's like gross foresty. It's like a room that's like
gross. How?
It's like a forest made up of these like very human anatomical pieces and like cross sections that look like sort of if you split a human down the middle. It is cool. Some of them are spitting out like weird steam. I really liked it. There's an artist named MPA who has a big pair of sunglasses that I thought was cool. Lauren Halsey has a good thing. There's a guy named EJ Hill. If you go, you have to make sure you go to every room because there are some rooms that just have like specific pieces in them. I walk in this one room that's pretty dark and I realize that he, the artist, is standing on one side of the room just like looking accusingly at me. He's on like a track, like winner's podium. I don't know what you call it. The like awards thing.
I don't know. The podium. Yeah.
Yeah. The podium.
But like, he's just actually watching people.
He is standing there. I was there on like day three of the thing. It's open 7 hours a day. I don't know. Is he going to be up there 7 hours a day every day? He already looked pretty like over it. I don't know if this was like an artistic choice
performance
to like not be to look kind of like pissed off. But I mean, he's got a long way. This show is open till like September. Oh,
wow. Yeah, that's a long commitment to make.
But it was advertised as like an endurance piece or something. The room is set up to look like a high school track.
Okay.
Yeah.
And wow, he just has to like hear all of the comments and then see the awkward, embarrassed.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, sometimes they're just looking straight ahead. He will look at you. That was my experience anyway. Jade Gordon and Megan Whitmarsh have a whole room that's very funny and weird. There's one by a guy named Aaron Fowler that's a big found object piece that uses a bunch of Minion pinatas. Yeah, just like a lot of
creative,
really
cool stuff.
Good stuff.
I'll check that out. That sounds cool.
It's in Westwood Village.
The Hammer is amazing.
The Hammer rules. Yeah. They have a lot of like
free every day.
Yeah. They have screenings and like panels and stuff there too. And they have these great chairs in the like plaza area. You ever sit those chairs?
Yeah.
They're from like Heather Wick Studios, and you can sit in the chair and like spin all the way around. And I'm not describing it very well.
No, <that's>,
oh cool, a chair you could spin in. It's all different than that. I mean, you go and you'll see it's a little bit different.
It's the reason that you never knew you wanted to go to Westwood, basically, because
totally. It's by far, as Westwood Village is concerned, you know Diddy Reese is still pretty good, although the ice cream sandwiches are getting pretty expensive,
kind of overdone at this point.
I think. I mean, it's not worth waiting in a really long line for. You go at like 11 a.m. and maybe you can get something. But yeah, Diddy Reese, The Hammer, The Boiling Crab, I like, although you can go get that other places.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than that, the Persian food south of Wilshire is good.
Yeah.
Then go home.
Then go home.
Yeah.
Make a day of it, half a day.
Oh, the timer didn't go off again, so I went over twice. Okay, time crisis.
Time crisis. We want to cover the new owner of the LA Times.
Official.
Yep. Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong.
Yep.
Just closed his purchase of the Times. Bought it from Tronk.
Tronk.
Did I say that right? Tronk.
Tronk. You have to say it. Yeah,
I feel like
that.
It has to be more nasal. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, he did finish the purchase this weekend. He put a full page ad out in the Times letting readers and also the staff who have suffered through a kind of demoralizing couple of years.
And then these last 2 months must have been harrowing because the sale was announced in early February.
Yeah. What, like 24, 48 hours after they voted to unionize the newsroom or something like that. It's been...
And then every like week or so, you'd read a report saying like, oh, the sale is in trouble. Oh, no. What's happening with the sale?
And especially the pure elation that the newsroom had at the announcement of the sale. I don't really know how, if it fell through, how you go back to
Trunk. A little awkward to have been like openly celebrating your hated boss going away.
Anyway, now
they got very bold about that. It was crazy.
If you go on Twitter and if you follow any of the LA Times journalists, they are dancing and just like drinking in the streets, basically celebrating their new owner, who put out this, as I said, full page letter, basically just talking about his vision for the Times, but also his understanding of the LA Times as a central institution to LA civic life, which reading it actually sounds pretty both inspiring and hopeful, you know, that it's definitely a message that the newsroom needs to hear. But also, it's good to know that there is going to be a leadership in charge that does see the press as an important institution, as opposed to
something you can just milk cash out of.
Ross Levinson and Louis Dvorkin, who really seemed like it was just like an extended frat party for them.
Yeah.
And it's literally just a business that you're going to gut, make money off of, and as soon as it ceases to be profitable, dump, which yep. is what they did.
Yeah.
So so it was interesting. He talks a bit about this is Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong, talks about his background. His parents escaped China during the Japanese occupation in World War II. He came out here, talks about learning about how press has the ability to inform people's opinions and fight against racism and discrimination. And I mean, aside from basically what I would call an interesting emphasis on the crisis of fake news, I think in general, yeah. it sounds
he says
like
that fake news is the cancer of our time.
Which seems like
he's
maybe...
he's a cancer doctor, and so this is... He speaks the language of cancer. Bad things are cancer. Good things are a cure
doctors.
For cancer.
Yeah, doctors. That's right. Okay, so new era for the Times, which has had, I mean, essentially a 21st century marred by inept leadership and even worse than ineptitude, just like outright... apathy from
thieves.
Yeah, people who were looking to basically loot the newsroom. So
yes,
it's probably the harbinger of good times for LA.
Definitely better. I mean, I think most of the celebration, I think they're optimistic about Soon-Shiong. I think most of they're happy, just happiest to have their old bosses be gone.
Yeah,
more than anything.
Right.
And the fact that they're putting up with a move to El Segundo and not complaining about it at all.
That's a lot.
Yeah, they've been through a lot. So that's great. Good for them. Time crisis.
Time crisis. Man, I am killing it so far.
You had like 10 seconds to spare. You really are doing a good job. This was crazy. My friend Neil informed me that Little Bangladesh, which is like a strip of probably four blocks yep. on 3rd Street.
In K-Town,
around like Alexandria. They want a neighborhood council. And you think, sure, great, you know, whatever. Everyone should have their own neighborhood council if they want to. Individuals should get to have one. They don't have, like, they don't have practical power. Nope. Just the bigger they are, the more influential they can be to the city council or, like, other groups. If they put out a unified statement, then sometimes city council members who represent them will be like, okay, this is a problem for me if I... go against them. They can definitely slow down development.
Right.
If they want to.
But they're almost purely advisory.
Yeah, sure.
Like, they have very little, like, legal authority.
Yeah, and Little Bangladesh is a unique neighborhood, and they have their own little neighborhood sign now. Skid Row went through this about a year and a half ago, trying to get their own neighborhood council.
Mm-hmm. Westwood earlier this year, whatever it was.
Westwood, like, UCLA. Campus. Yeah, and they got theirs.
Right.
Skid Row did not get theirs.
Oh, yeah. Because downtown residents really mobilized against
yes,
that.
Yes, there are all kinds of ways to manipulate the vote on these things. Neil pointed out that all you have to do to vote, you have to be a stakeholder.
Right.
And all you have to have is a driver's license and two receipts from a store in the neighborhood.
Wow.
To be a stakeholder. So lest you think you could just go
that
to
seems
one
like,
store.
That seems like an interesting threshold. But
yeah,
sure.
So anyway, Little Bangladesh wants to do this. The larger Koreatown neighborhood mm-hmm. is fighting very hard to stop this from happening. And they put out a video, the Keep Koreatown organization put out a video promoting a no vote on the Little Bangladesh Neighborhood Council. And I'm going to show it to Scott. This is a segment called Scott Reacts. The track is My House by Flo Rida. Hopefully it's tinny enough that we don't get in any trouble for using it. Okay, here we go. We are Koreatown, it says.
What?
You're reacting very quietly.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm a little bit in shock right now. We are a brand. K-Town is a brand and a culture. What is the threat that... Bangladesh poses to this.
Well, there's one thing that you see a lot of in the video.
Oh, what, my God. Expand, not divide.
What is the thing you mostly see in this video?
Korean children?
Korean children and adults.
Which, I mean, what is the... Okay, first of all, I have problems with Keep Koreatown as a name in general. But also... Korean Angelenos are what, a minority? They're like a 30%
of Koreatown, which is mostly Latino.
Which is mostly Latino.
Yeah.
So that seems highly problematic in the first place.
It's very jingoistic.
Yeah.
You know, Koreatown is having a real moment in terms of not wanting certain changes to happen. They've campaigned very hard against the emergency shelter that's going up there. And they're really, really fighting this separation by Little Bangladesh. I guess the Koreatown is a brand thing. Neil was saying that they're being like aggressively expansionist Little Bangladesh, but I mean they fought to get their own neighborhood,
which was something that also the K-Town Neighborhood Council did not want to happen when that did happen. Somewhat time 2012, 2013. I think was when they actually got the little street sign neighborhood designation. And that was seen as, I don't know, an impingement upon the iconic neighborhood
Koreatown brand.
But like, really though, four blocks or whatever it is, it just seems extremely petty, if
anything.
So
petty. Time crisis. What other stuff? We're not out of things.
There was a appreciation for the Sandlot.
Oh yeah, so this is nuts. I haven't even told you the crazy thing about this. So I was watching the Dodger game the other night, and they had almost the entire cast of the Sandlot.
Uh-huh.
25th anniversary. Want to feel old?
Did any of them grow up to be famous baseball players?
most of them were on the Dodgers, so it was very easy. Most of them were already there. No, it was the chubby redheaded guy and Smalls and who I guess was in a domestic abuse thing at one point and now a bodybuilder, essentially. It looks was busting out of his uniform that they gave him. So they're all lined up, you know, nice thing. But I noticed that Benny the Jet Rodriguez is not there.
Oh.
And so it just occurs to me, they let do it. So, right. Like, what's going on with Benny the Jet Rodriguez? Does he not show up for these things? And so I just decided to look
He's
up
too big.
What's going on with him today. And so his name is Mike Vitar, and he became an L.A. Firefighter.
No kidding.
He's in the LAFD, yes. But last year, I don't know how I missed this, the case was last year. I guess this happened maybe in like 2016. But in 2017, he was convicted with a bunch of other firefighters of, it was Halloween, and they're all at their homes, and guess where all the firefighters live?
Santa Clarita?
Chatsworth. Very close.
Okay.
And this guy had, was like finishing giving out his Halloween candy, a different guy, a non-firefighter. His name's Samuel Chang. And he goes out on the street in like a costume, one of those dad costumes that you just like throw together.
Yeah.
And just like look like garbage. And so he's walking down the street and a bunch of firefighters are like gathered on the street, I guess, with their kids.
Right.
And they say, "What are you doing here? What are you doing on our street?" One of them, dressed in a He-Man outfit with like fake muscles, runs up on Samuel Chang and beats him up. Like is like choking him. Like the pictures of it are horrible, and Samuel Chang like he passes out for a second, but then like gets up and manages to run away. And the He-Man firefighter and Mike Vidar, Benny the Jet Rodriguez, chase him down the street.
Wait, so they have like turfs in Chatsworth that they?
I think it was like they asked him if he was like I'm giving out my I have this extra candy I'm just giving out the candy before I go to bed. And they said, is the candy poisoned or does it have does the candy have drugs in it? And he said no.
Oh yeah, a notorious problem, candy being injected.
Yes.
With-
and he said he smelled alcohol on their breath, and so Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
He's
was
fast.
Part
I remember
of this,
that from the movie.
That's right. Part of this gang of firefighters that chased down this guy on Halloween in Chatsworth. Last year this happened. So maybe it was just a little fresh.
Wow.
And they decided not to get him involved. Yeah, he has domestic abuse charges in 2009. So I guess they're just waiting for the the 35th anniversary for Mike Vidar to get involved.
Isn't the end of the movie they like all go watch him play pro baseball together? I just imagine.
And I want to say that Smalls is the announcer.
Yeah, that's right. You're so right. He's the announcer. I wonder if they all went to like his trial date together.
Yeah. Just the kid, the redhead kid,
yeah.
Ham, looks pretty much the same. He seems like one of those child actors that like never grows up.
Yeah. How pissed off would you be if you had to hear "You're Killing Me, Smalls" for your entire life?
Every one of the little like promotional Instagrams they did, everyone was saying "You're Killing Me, Smalls."
Ruined
every
my
time
entire
he
life.
Up.
Yeah,
yeah. Awful. Awful. I felt really bad for him, but he seemed to be good natured about it. Okay, time crisis. We should say so. Earlier this week, there was a march for the Keeping Families Together to protest the.
Separation
of
from their families.
Families, children going to camps. Lots of people, I assume some who are separated from their families, are being put in federal prisons in California. There's one in Victorville.
Yeah. Adelanto.
Yes. So, you know, not that it's irrelevant to anyone, but it is a California specific issue. So there was this march out of MacArthur Park. I went, I was very excited to gloat to Scott about how I went and he didn't. And then I, you know, happened to see his big hair in front of me in the march. And so that sort of deflated me. But there's another one.
Yeah.
From the same spot. It's not until next month. I thought it was this Saturday. I guess we'll just tip it again.
Okay.
July 21st at 10 a.m.
From MacArthur Park to Detention Center downtown.
To the detention center. It was great. And it's fun to walk down the middle of the street in Westlake.
You know, doing that in Westlake always makes me feel so hopeful in a way that some of the other protests in downtown have not made me feel hopeful, but just going out and actually, you know, like you can really see people as you're walking through these communities that are not necessarily like overwhelmingly immigrant, but that a lot of people have friends and family that have migrated here from other countries, and you can see people in the windows and like, I don't know. It feels very much like a community. So
yeah.
It makes me feel very positive.
That's a great neighborhood. That neighborhood is just bumping all day.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So that's something to look forward to in a month.
By the way, I was at.
There's more time. Crisis yet. You were where?
I was in Griffith Park, and I just was hearing just rattling explosions today, and I was wondering what the hell happened. And I was like looking down, and I was like, "Oh yeah, isn't Mexico playing Germany in the World Cup?"
And they
won.
Right?
That was how I found out that Mexico won that soccer game.
That's funny. I was expecting fireworks. I didn't hear any. Time crisis. should we play? Do we have anything else on the docket?
I don't know. No, I think that was the docket.
Okay. Maybe I'll just play the Bourdain clip.
Yeah.
That I thought was good. We're weeks late on this, obviously.
Are you setting the timer for Bourdain?
Well, you know, it's a time crisis. You have to set no one is exempt from the time crisis.
By virtue of playing this recording, you have control over how long it goes.
I'll play it for both of us. Right before I first moved to LA, I watched the Anthony Bourdain No Reservations, just to educate. I thought this would be a good way to like figure out what I'd been to the city like once before
right.
I moved. And he did an intro to it that I think is great. It just kind of like informed how I have sort of felt about the city ever since.
Right.
So let me just play it real fast. Every episode is on Daily Motion, so it's pretty. It's not hard to find.
Oh, why have I been buying them on Amazon?
seen this place and this view before, but L.A. is a big city, a sprawl, really. Dorothy Parker said of it, there's no there there. But Dorothy wasn't from L.A., and she was, of course, wrong. Real people work at real jobs in Los Angeles, in jobs having nothing to do with making movies. Real people live real lives outside the fantasy world of the Hollywood Dream Factory. They don't live in hacienda-style mansions or shop on Rodeo Drive. The view out their windows is of another city, not a landscaped backyard. They don't drive black Humvees with tinted windows. They don't have a screenplay tucked away in a drawer harboring secret dreams that maybe, just maybe, the right person will read it. This is the real Los Angeles. Wherever you live in LA, there's one basic reality everyone shares.
So then he talks about traffic and stuff. I just thought...
It does sum up LA, like the actual LA that people live in.
Yeah.
The one that I have known since I moved here.
Yeah. And yeah. I sort of did kind of think that lots of people here work in the entertainment industry or other. That's kind of the industry that defines the city.
Yeah.
But he was right about that. He apparently rides the bus at some point in the episode in the intro, and like, even if it's performative, which it is, you know, right. He doesn't have to ride the bus. It was like, I think it's very true about the city, and the whole episode is kind of informed by that idea that the entertainment industry is just this tiny little part of it, and mostly nobody cares about
right as invisible to 99% of people who live here.
Yep, that's right. So we are the last to say rest in peace, Anthony Bourdain. That is LA Podcast. Time crisis.
Time crisis.
We will be back next week. Oh, with an interesting guest. We're going to talk about bathrooms on Skid Row. In the past, when we've promised conversations about things, we have not delivered on them. This one, I feel confident that we will deliver.
Someday, we'll line up the entire episode for you a week beforehand, and then also give it to you. But
yes,
for now, we'll stick with just the guest.
Yeah. Bye.